This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Each Friday on Cincinnati Edition, we present an in-depth discussion of the developments behind the headlines. This week, we'll discuss Ohio Governor John Kasich's State of the State address Tuesday night and hear the response to his speech. We'll also get updates on the Cincinnati mayoral race and the investigation into the finances of local nonprofit Center for Closing the Health Gap. Joining us first is WVXU digital news editor and reporter Tana Weingartner with some new developments this week in the Cameo nightclub shooting that happened on March 26th when 17 people were hit by gunfire. Tana, what is the latest on this?
Well, yesterday, the Hamilton County prosecutor, Joe Dieters, announced that they were adding a second murder indictment against Cornell Beckley, who was one of the two men that had been arrested in connection with the shooting. The other man, also DeAndre Davis, who had been charged with murder, died. So that's where the second murder count comes from. And then charges against Davis will be dismissed as he's passed on.
Yeah. Now, Beckley is facing, what, 38 other indictments? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Right, 38 counts, involuntary manslaughter, felonious assault, inducing panic. I think the felonious assault is where you get the big number from because it's 30 there, I think. You know, everybody that was injured, I guess.
Counts as felonious assault. Yeah. So what did Dieters have to say in terms of, did he shed any light on what resulted in this? What led to this?
Yeah, they're not talking a whole lot about it. Basically, he said this was maybe two groups of people. A group from Madisonville and a group from Price Hill. The Madisonville folks had just come from a funeral and they weren't pleased to see the Price Hill folks at the nightclub and started sort of jawing at each other, I guess, and pointing gun-shaped fingers at one another. And then he says that Cornell Beckley got up on this little stage and actually pulled out a gun and started just, you know, shooting wildly into the crowd.
But he said
Dieter said that he didn't think this was a turf war or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. So he said just stemmed from a feud of some type, a disagreement of some type. What about the possibility of other people being involved in this, other people being charged, Tana?
Well, they say that three guns were involved, at least three that leave casings behind. So there is still a third gun they have casings from, but they haven't found the gun. And so that could mean possibly a third shooter. So the investigation continues.
Tana, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Tana Weingartner, she's the digital news editor for WVXU and also a reporter here. And joining us now, WCPO.com politics and government reporter Paula Christian and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. And Paula and Howard, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Sure.
Yeah, nice to be here.
How is this Cameo nightclub shooting going to impact the mayor's race? Are we already seeing that happening to some extent?
Yes, I think it's definitely elevating the issue of public safety and gun violence, especially heading into a summer. And that combined, when you have Joe Dieters saying it's going to be a long summer and having a woman hit by a car in Over the Rhine and having another man drug out of his car and shot after hitting a child, all in the span of a few days, certainly elevates public safety in this race.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the Cranley administration, they're going to throw out a lot of numbers about how violent crimes have been down over the last few years. But you know, obviously, there's a serious problem with guns on the street, and that's going to have to be dealt with. Between whichever two candidates come out of this primary, it's going to be an issue.
And it's a real. It doesn't even necessarily matter what the numbers are in violent crime. It's a perception issue. Is if the public feels that they're safe. Walking downtown, walking in Over the Rhine. And when you have high-profile crimes like this, the public and voters are not looking at numbers. They're looking at what happened last week.
Or people in Cincinnati neighborhoods who are just walking out of their front doors in their own neighborhoods are worried about, whether or not, they or their children or someone is going to be struck by gunfire, by just stray gunfire.
Mm-hmm. I think it could be the number one issue in the race. This and just racial disparities in neighborhoods. Those, I think, are the two big issues in this race.
These pockets of poverty and also the food deserts,
yes,
which have come up. The number of communities, mostly African American, mostly low income, that have absolutely no grocery stores whatsoever. And people, are having a hard time getting to good, wholesome, nutritious food. And that is going to be a real issue in this campaign. How do we do this? They did it in one way in Clifton without government help. But I don't think that's going to work in very many neighborhoods.
No. Clifton is a
different – it's a wealthy neighborhood where people could afford to do that. And if you talk about Avondale, for example, where they're trying to get a grocery store into Avondale Town Center, but it seems like – and as Cranley said in the NAACP debate, it's kind of shaky now. This is going to be a real issue. People are going to talk about it. People are going to question the candidates on it.
So back to the issue of public safety, Howard, and the Cameo nightclub shooting. What are the candidates saying about that in particular?
Well, I haven't heard them say a great deal at all about it. It didn't come up at all in the NAACP.
Well, they did ask about what were the top three priorities for each, and Cranley jumped on Yvette Simpson when public safety did not make it into her top three.
That's true.
She said pools, rec centers, and I forget the other one, health clinics maybe.
Health clinics.
And he said, what about public safety, and why is that not in your top three? So I think from Yvette Simpson's perspective, the issue of gun violence comes back to the root causes that she's been talking about all along, which is lack of affordable housing, lack of jobs, lack of transportation, just lack of future in these neighborhoods, and that gun violence is just it's just a byproduct of a miserable life.
It's a sign that she says it's a symptom of all these other problems.
She explains it in terms of, okay, look, recreation centers, we have to fund them. We have to keep them open because young people, need a place to go besides street corners where they can get in trouble. And that's where trouble begins. Mm-hmm. And she sees it as Paula said, getting at the root causes of crime. Cranley, of course, has a wholly different view of this. He said we got to attack this, directly.
Yeah, and from his perspective, it's really hard to lure new economic development to a city if there's a perception that it's riddled with crime
or particular neighborhoods.
Yeah, so he has to take a more immediate cut this back now approach. He doesn't necessarily have 2 or 3 years of exploring the root causes of why this happens to begin with. So it's just two different approaches.
People have been debating the root causes of crime and violence in the streets for decades, and nobody's ever gotten to the real core of it and solved all those basic problems because there's too many of them. And it's going to be about – the debate is going to be exactly what you're saying about what do we do now to stop this violence or at least cut it back and get some of these guns off the street.
The streetcar, though, you're talking about public safety being the top issue.
Oh, that's a big one,
Streetcar is also another big issue.
And bus. Transportation is huge. We're coming up with our – questions for our debate on Monday, and everybody wants to ask about the streetcar. It's really a top issue for voters.
Yeah, it was funny, the NAACP debate. Simpson, who was a streetcar supporter, but was also talking about the need for more buses and was accusing, Cranley of spending hundreds of millions of dollars, to build so private developers could build garages for private companies rather than using, funds to put more buses on the streets so low-income people who find jobs can get to them.
Those are valid points.
It's absolutely valid points. What's the point of creating jobs for people if they can't get to them?
Yeah, and what's the point of giving tax incentives to developers for garages that are supposed to be public, but you don't even know they're public because they're part of a private?
Big,
how is that public tax money spent right. well.
Well, and then if bus routes are cut and people think it's because they're spending on the streetcar, what kind of impact is that going to have?
I don't know. Streetcar is one of those issues that yeah. is so divisive. It's yeah. I mean, you either love it or you hate it. There's not much middle ground there. I don't know. There's just people that think it's fundamentally a waste of money, mm-hmm. and they're adamant about it. And then there's people that fundamentally believe it is the beginning of a transportation rebirth for
the city.
Right,
and they'll point to the economic development yes. that's been going along that streetcar route, too.
So I just don't know for either of the three candidates if you're going to win on that issue anyways. I mean, you're not going to win people over.
No, you're not going to win people over. And, you know, if you're going to start talking about extending the streetcar
that there's an issue.
To uptown,
yeah.
The first thing you're going to have to do is explain how. How are you going to pay for it? And nobody can do that at this point.
Well, where do the three candidates for mayor stand on extension?
Well, Cranley certainly doesn't want
this okay. in the first place.
Didn't want it in the first place. That's right. And yeah. then Yvette Simpson, I think, is definitely for it. And Rob Richardson yeah. as well, I would say, is for it. Is that right?
I don't know for certain on that. Yeah. I would assume that.
They don't really want to talk about it a whole lot, okay?
They do try and avoid the subject a little bit.
They do try to avoid the subject.
They try and avoid the streetcar and shift immediately to bus service.
To bus service, to, you know—
Or maybe the broader issue of public transportation.
Well, yeah. yes. Right. Because, you know, they're walking—I mean, Simpson and Richardson are walking a very fine line, too, because there are a lot of voters in the African-American community who don't like the streetcar, who wanted the money spent on buses.
Right.
So for them to support the streetcar and talk about that support with reporters is kind of risky, because there are people in those poorer communities that would have rather seen more bus service.
Yes. If you were a person in Bond Hill, say, and you got a job and the job is downtown, what good is that streetcar going to do you?
None.
You're going to depend – and you don't have a car.
Yeah. So you're right. Bus service is
much more important to mm-hmm. them. And that goes for – a whole lot of neighborhoods in this city, whether you're talking about East Side, West Side, the central core of the city, black, white neighborhoods, doesn't matter. You know, they see buses as more of a practical choice for them rather than a streetcar. A streetcar doesn't do anything for them. It goes up and down over the Rhine and to downtown.
Well, they call it like a party line. I mean, it right. just takes people from bars.
Takes from one bar to the next, or the ballpark, yeah. or to the banks, or, you know, whatever. But, you know, it doesn't do any good in terms of solving that problem of creating jobs for people and then those people not being able to get to those jobs.
So,
because they don't have their own
cars. For that issue, Cranley probably has the advantage
right.
because he's always been very clear about where he stands and where he thinks the money should have gone. And, you know, I think that Simpson and Richardson probably need to be pressed further on their position.
Yeah, I think that's true. But Simpson did make a pretty good point about these, you know, the investments that have gone into some of these parking garages
yes.
that mainly benefit big corporations.
Yeah, I downtown. Think economic development will be another
right.
big issue in this, certainly coming up at the debates. You know, yes, John Cranley can brag that he's brought in so many thousands of new jobs, but a lot of those are headquarter jobs, they're downtown jobs, they're white collar jobs, and those are not jobs that are going to a person with a high school degree living in Bond Hill. And, you know, that there's a sense of deep frustration in, you know, the African-American community supported John Cranley in 2013. And, you know, some believe that their lives, as they see it, as they walk out their front door, have been exactly unchanged. And will they support him again? And mm-hmm. will he be able to convince them to?
Do you know, Howard, if Yvette Simpson and Rob Richardson, have they filed to be council candidates just in case they don't make it to the primary?
Can't do that? You cannot do that. You have to make a choice, one or the other. You cannot run for both offices. So, you know, if somehow Yvette Simpson, you know, doesn't get through the primary, she's done.
Well, the Inquirer endorsed Yvette Simpson and John Cranley, and they made the point in their endorsement that Rob Richardson should have run for city council because he would have been a shoo-in.
Right.
You know, but
I've asked him about that, and he, you know, basically says, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be mayor. So, you know.
Do you think he's found that this to be a little bit tougher than he thought it might have been?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Yes, he has. It's a tough business, and it's a particularly tough business if you have never run for an elective office before and had to go out and raise money. And this is a very difficult city to run in, too, because you have to show your face in basically 52 neighborhoods.
And I think he's realized that it's hard to get his name out because you have a John Cranley and an Yvette Simpson who just by the nature of what they do on an everyday basis have publicity, and he doesn't.
They can sit there in the city council meetings on Wednesdays and dominate the conversation, just suck all the air out of the room, and Rob Richardson is standing in the corner raising his hand trying to get attention. And it's difficult for him because he doesn't have that platform of a public office.
Paula, we've got the first of a series of televised mayoral debates starting on Monday. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this first one.
Well, this is a debate that WCPO is sponsoring with Radio 1 and with Society of Professional Journalists. And it's a debate. It's close to the public, but it will be televised from 7 to 8, and then we'll continue streaming online till 8:30. And we will be asking the three candidates about a wide range of issues, many of which we've just talked about.
You've mentioned a few of them already. What are some of the other things you'd like to ask about?
Oh, gosh, the aging infrastructure. Will we ever replace the Western Hills Viaduct? What role can the city have in helping with the Brent Spence Bridge, economic development? The whole issue of sanctuary city, does that really mean anything at all? And if they're willing to take it a step further, the division between just the disparity between housing, transportation, health with minorities living in the city, the food deserts that we talked about before, minority inclusion, how many of the city contracts are going to minority business owners? We really could spend many, many hours talking to them. Of course, we'd have nobody listening after about an hour, but
how long is this? This is only one
it's
hour?
It's an hour.
Oh,
I think people start to fade off.
So it's televised for an hour.
It's televised for an hour.
And then live stream for
another
half hour
or so.
Yeah, you make a good point, though. There are enough issues to talk about that you could easily fill an hour and much, much more.
Yes.
Absolutely. And for someone from like Howard and I's perspective, who can hear the stump speech coming before they open their mouths, you also want that extra time to actually get them to answer your question, which doesn't always happen.
Which is not always easy.
No. And the standard – they all have the standard things that they say in every debate, standard, and it's just trying to get past that.
And how many televised debates will there be altogether? Is it three?
They're three.
They're three altogether?
Three in April.
And this the first one is what you're involved
one.
In. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the reporting that you and Amanda Seitz have been doing, looking into how the Center for Closing the Health Gap has been spending funding from the city.
Mm-hmm.
Had a news story come out. What's the latest on this?
Well, we took a look at what happened back in 2008 when the state was offering seven big cities in Ohio funding to create new minority health offices within their city health departments, which was essentially free money and a lot of free money, $250,000 to the cities to create these offices specifically designed to target minority health discrepancies in and disparities, rather, and to fix them, to do something about it. So, of course, the City of Cincinnati's Health Department applied for the grant. We spoke to three former health board members who were then shocked to learn that City Council stripped them of the grant and that they were not able to open this health office. And they all pointed the finger directly at Dwight Tillery, who is the CEO of Center for Closing the Health Gap now, for causing this to happen. They said that they were all contacted by Dwight Tillery and urged not to vote for this grant. And they said that he felt like it would be a duplication of the services that the nonprofit already provided. From their perspective, they couldn't believe anyone would want to turn down free money from the state. And why couldn't they all work together? Because this is a huge problem with infant mortality rates and life expectancy rates. And why couldn't they all work together? But they felt very strongly that—
And I imagine with these issues, they're tough issues. They're probably thinking, we need all the help we can get.
Exactly. They had concrete—the folks that I spoke to had concrete plans for this money. They wanted to open a visiting nurse at the targeted to zip codes where there were high levels of infant mortality or death rates, and perhaps have a mobile clinic to – they had active programs they wanted to do, and they were dismayed that City Council voted to force them to give the grant money back. And one of the council members who voted for that was Mayor John Cranley.
So there's no going back on this now. They can't.
No, the
they can't ask
gone.
For the money. They yeah. can't. They
no.
can't just open another clinic.
No, and that door is closed. We reached out to the Ohio Commission on Minority Health. They are no longer accepting applications. So to date, the City of Cincinnati missed out on $560,000 in state funding, and it is the only major city in the state of Ohio that does not have a minority health office within its health department. So that means if you go to Columbus, Cleveland, Akron, Toledo, Dayton, Youngstown, they all have these offices. Only Cincinnati does not.
It just begs the question of why one nonprofit organization should have a monopoly on this issue when there are so, as you say, when there's so much, so many problems out there that need to be addressed.
Well, our statement from Dwight Tillery was that he felt like the nonprofit was already tasked with this issue and was doing a good job, and that it had the funding in place and that there would be a duplication of services. So that was his explanation.
And you've questioned how they've spent city funding.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the city, after our reporting, the Mayor Cranley called for an audit of Center for Closing the Health Gap after some questionable invoices that were paid by the city and some indications that they were not living up to their $1 million city contract.
And what's been the response from Closing the Health Gap about that, reporting on the spending aspect?
Well, they did not like the reporting that WCPO and the Inquirer did, and they were quick to call all of the journalists involved racist, and they lashed out at the city for never complaining about any of the invoices that they just paid without question and wondered why this was an issue. Now the
that was part of their point was
yes,
that they were just following what
exactly.
the city laid out in
and
terms
that is
of the
a
rules
valid
for this.
Point yeah. that until nobody ever questioned the invoices that
yeah.
were paid.
Right.
So the city manager promised that the audit would be done before the city budget in mid-May, and so we'll just have to see what comes out. All of this state funding issue is a big issue given that the city's facing a $25 million budget deficit. And if you have a nonprofit that's used to getting the bulk of its budget from the city, will it get it this year?
Paula, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
WCPO.com politics and government reporter Paula Christensen, and also Howard Wilkinson. And Howard will join us after the break as we take a look at Governor Kasich's State of the State address with the Inquirer's Chrissy Thompson and Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and we continue our review of news affecting the tri-state area. Joining us now, Cincinnati Inquirer Columbus Bureau Chief Chrissy Thompson.
Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Chrissy, Karen, and Howard, good to have everybody here this afternoon.
Thanks.
Glad to be here.
Let's start by talking about Governor Kasich's State of the State address. It was in Sandusky on Tuesday. And Chrissy, what were your takeaways from this particular speech?
Yeah, you know, we didn't hear a whole lot of new things from Governor Kasich. His budget actually came out more than 2 months ago. So we actually know much of what Republicans think of that budget. And that is that they don't like a lot of some of his signature pieces in that budget. That's really not new. That has happened at Governor Kasich before. But so his speech was focused largely on kind of defending some of those principles, but also sort of distinguishing himself from many Republicans, including Donald Trump. He talked quite a bit about the risk of people in blue-collar jobs being put out of work by robots. That's very different from Donald Trump saying that he's going to bring back manufacturing jobs to the Rust Belt. So that was one main focus of Kasich's speech.
Chrissy, do you get the sense that he's looking to 2020 in any way, shape, or form?
I mean, I still am of the opinion that he's not going to run in 2020, and he has said that himself. He said no 7 times about that in a recent interview. The thought is, though, that we don't really know what's going to happen with Donald Trump's presidency, and I don't think that he would primary a sitting Republican president. But if Donald Trump doesn't run again, if Donald Trump isn't president in 4 years, you know, anything like that, I think that Governor Kasich would like to keep his name out there as someone that the party might turn to in that situation.
Yes, he will keep his name out there, and he's doing that very soon with a book tour.
So, Karen, now what were your thoughts from the State of the State address?
Well, I think it was interesting to hear him talk a little bit about opioids. You know, mm-hmm. we've got a huge crisis in Ohio. I mean, last statistics that we have from the state are from 2015. 8 people a day were dead of opioid overdoses in that year. It looks like it's going to be 4,000 people who are going to be on that list in the coming data set, which is 11 people a day. And so to hear the governor speak a little bit about this and to propose using $20 million in Third Frontier grant money to talk about research on how to deal with the problem of drug addiction, how to prevent drug addiction, how to help people in treatment, that was an interesting approach. But, you know, there are a lot of folks who say that there is not enough being put out there for treatment and for local communities who are dealing with the real effects of this right now.
Yeah,
they don't have time to wait on the research. They don't have time to wait on helping people down the road. The idea is you've got communities that are bringing in, you know, refrigerated trailers to try to keep bodies cool, you know, because they're stacking up. You've got police departments saying that they're overwhelmed. I mean, there's a lot of this going on. And Kasich did spend a fair amount of time talking about the problem itself, but that was the only proposal that really hit on any new money. And so I think that there was some disappointment that he didn't get a little bit more aggressive about what could be done. You know, I know local governments have been hoping that maybe he might release some of the $2 billion in the rainy day fund, but that seems very unlikely at this point.
Yeah, the $20 million from a Third Frontier money for research into this. And that may be effective. That may help someday. But as Karen said, local communities are worried about right now. They want help from the state now because it's putting such a strain on police departments, on EMTs. You know, they're doing nothing but responding to overdoses, and it's keeping, you know, cops and firefighters and EMTs off the streets for their other duties.
And I would also add, you know, Howard joined me for our live coverage on mm-hmm. Ohio's public radio and television stations that night. Thank you very much, Howard, by the way.
Certainly. Absolutely.
And, You know, one of the other things we talked a little bit about was, you know, some of the educational things that he mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, Kasich actually went back on this whole idea of having teachers be required to do externships with businesses to renew their teaching licenses. That's not gone over well with the legislature, especially with teachers groups, too. And then also this idea of adding three business people who are non-voting members to school boards. That's gotten kind of a lukewarm reception. Plus, he spent a great deal of the budget or the speech talking about his budget, really making the case for keeping the budget as it is. But that's going to be really tough. Already, we just got a report this week about how income tax collections fell again, which means that the state is now over half a billion dollars below estimates. So what's going to happen there? You know, you've got the 17% income tax cut in his budget. It's paid for by these taxes that I don't think a lot of lawmakers want to go ahead and increase, and then this less money coming in. There are a lot of priorities to juggle here, and I don't know how this is all going to work out. And that's not even putting any new money toward education and the drug crisis and all these other infant mortality, which he only mentioned very briefly. You know, all these other priorities that are out there.
I was really struck by the fact that he talked about the community colleges, you know, saying that's where it's at in the future, and basically snubbing his nose at the state university system. If I were in the state university system, president of a Miami or a University of Cincinnati, I would listen to that speech and be very worried.
That strikes
about the
me.
Future.
Yeah, if you're concerned about job creation, I think you'd be concerned about the state
his
university
argument
system.
Is that the community colleges can do it better, you know, for training for these jobs of the future and at a lower cost to the students. And
he has
maybe
talked
that's
about
true.
That before, though.
Yeah.
He has talked about the his desire to see more people use community colleges and his real goal, and you've have some other legislative leaders who have talked about this, really reducing the costs, you know, reducing the cost by 5%, trying to find ways to cut costs of the college. I mean, college costs in Ohio are really, really, I think, in the highest in the nation in many cases.
Chrissy, I'd like to back up for a minute to what we were talking about earlier with the requiring teachers to job shadow business owners when they're trying to renew their licenses. Why do you think that Governor Kasich doubled down on this? I mean, why is he so adamant and insistent on doing this?
Well, he has been looking for ways for businesses and educators to work together better. I mean, he basically said in his speech, "Do you think our schools are preparing students for the future? I don't, you know." And that offends teachers. so he starts off kind of putting them back on their heels. But his thought has been recently, at least the last several years, that we have focused way too much on college preparation in our schools and not enough on preparing folks for jobs they can get right out of college, which, you know, Ohio has one of the largest in the nation percentage-wise working class populations. This is what a lot of our students do try to get these sorts of jobs when they graduate. And educators do admit that perhaps they have focused too much on college prep. But again, some of the arguments he uses kind of puts them back on their heels. Like, I've heard teachers unions even say, you know, we would be open to this teacher job shadow proposal if it weren't a requirement. You know, if there were more money for it, or it could be one of the things you did to get your license renewed instead of this is a requirement to do that.
Or if it were limited to high school or junior high school teachers. It's kind of hard to imagine what the point of having a first grade teacher shadowing business people is, you know, when they're just doing basic education every day.
And Karen, you were saying this is more than likely not going anywhere. I mean, he's got some pretty strong opposition to this, doesn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, teachers have been very concerned about it.
And like, the legislature, he's got some pretty strong opposition too, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there's real concern about the details. How would you make this work in practicality?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have teachers who, would this be something they have to do every year, every 3 years, every 5 years, whatever? You know, you think about how many teachers you've got out there. I can't remember the stat off the top of my head. There's a lot. And having them all have to do this, how in the world would that work? And so the practical details of that. But, you know, there's a lot of things that the governor says in speeches, and Chrissy and I hear them all the time, you know, that are big ideas but don't necessarily translate to practical things. And so, you know, I'm interested to see the details of, you know, some of the things he talked about in the speech, like his chief innovation officer, this position he wants to create that would head up the Ohio Institute of Technology. What exactly and that institute would look at, trying to find out what the next career paths are, what the next jobs are. I don't know how that would work. And so I'm interested to hear a little bit more about some of the details of his big ideas, his big talking points, but how do you make them work?
No, I think we should kind of look broadly here at what's going on with Governor Kasich. He has less than 2 years left in office. Whoever takes over from him is either going to be a Democrat or a Republican who is quite different from him and hasn't been aligned with his administration very closely. I even include Mary Taylor in that. She has taken issue quietly and sometimes publicly with several of Kasich's stances, and there certainly isn't a movement in his administration to back her campaign per se, or all of them join her staff if she were to get elected. So I think that, and in some ways, the Republicans in the legislature have already started exercising some of their independence that they would with any kind of lame duck governor. And so a lot of what we're seeing is Governor Kasich focusing on some things that he can explore, some things that interest him, some ideas he can throw out there, and sort of also not saying it, but acknowledging the fact that some of this stuff, you know, real big economic changes or whatever, that would just get undone in 2 years. And so he's not doing it. He's going to focus on some of these ideas that may not even get into fruition, rather than trying to do a major economic overhaul again, or honestly commit another $1 billion to opiates or whatever. You can criticize the approach, but I think that's really what's going on.
Karen, I also wanted to ask, you were talking earlier about the his idea of how do you deal with the opioid crisis, and he's bringing the third frontier into this. And typically, when you think of third frontier, you are thinking of things that are research, more high-tech in nature. So is what he's saying he wants to look at a more high-tech approach to dealing with the opioid crisis? Is that what he's saying?
Well, I think he's trying to approach it from a different angle because, you know, we've heard over and over that you can't prosecute your way out of this, you can't arrest your way out of this, whatever. So what are the other angles that there are to try to come at this crisis? I mean, we're putting money into law enforcement and that end of it. The advocates will say we need to put more money into the treatment end of it, apply for a federal waiver and allow for more beds and treatment centers so that when people are arrested or somehow are identified, they can go right to treatment instead of having to wait, because if they wait, they often won't go. But I think he's looking for another avenue. I mean, he talked before the speech, about a week before the speech, about a new approach to putting limits on prescription painkillers. So there was one avenue. I think now he is trying to look at the next thing, so to speak, and saying, you know, the state has limited money. There's this Third Frontier Commission that has grants that they can offer for high-tech innovation kind of things. What about that as a possibility? And I think, you know, he's getting some praise for that because it is a little bit of thinking in a different direction, but still there's the other half of what do you do while the crisis is going on and getting worse and worse, arguably. And so I think he's trying to find a different approach and a new idea while still having to deal with the very serious crisis that's going on. And you know, you have plenty of people who are saying that the state is not doing enough for this huge problem.
Yeah, and the state, I mean, it is a new approach, and it may well be a fantastic idea. But like I say, the local governments are still eyeing this rainy day fund and saying, hey, look, we could use this money down here.
But I think he's always been very loath to you know, release any money from that.
Yeah.
But the argument is, Ted Strickland made this argument when he was running last year for Senate. He made it a little late because a lot of people didn't hear it. But the idea that, you know, when it's raining, you have to use the rainy day fund.
It's raining now,
some people will say, because of this opioid crisis. Now is the time to use it. But I think he's very, very loath to do that. I think he's very proud of having that fund where it is. And you know, another recession could be around the corner.
Yeah. He's predicted that.
And yeah, he's even said he thinks that's what's going to happen.
He has said we're on the verge of a recession, but the numbers don't necessarily show that.
No, they don't.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with Cincinnati Inquirer, Columbus Bureau Chief Chrissy Thompson, Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU Politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Karen, before we move along, any final thoughts on the governor's State of the State address?
I think it was his third longest one, 70 minutes.
70 minutes, yes.
70 minutes. So that's I thought it was interesting. He said twice he's not running for anything. And interestingly, though, he is starting a book tour. In New Hampshire. So, read into that
places.
What you want.
Yep. Yeah.
And he certainly said he was not running, or as he put it, I think, he said he was not running in the speech. He said previously, I don't see it happening. You know, it's never a flat out no, it seems like. And people will point out that there's the same kind of things he said before. You know, he ran in 2016. I think Chrissy is right, though, that looking at him down the road, whether he would primary a sitting president, I don't know. But I think he wants to be viewed as an option and has certainly talked up his bipartisan stance on things, though there are many people in this state who will say he's not nearly as bipartisan as he tells people on the national scene he is.
Yeah. His ambitions, are never going to go away, I don't think. But, you know, he also is a political realist, and if the situation is not right for him, depending on what happens with Donald Trump and his presidency. I thought it was funny. I saw a story this morning. Arnold Schwarzenegger, of all people, endorsed Kasich for president in 2020. So he's got at least that for a start.
He's got one big fan out there so far. Right. Yeah. Hey, Chrissy, what about you? What are your final thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, I think what we're seeing from our governor is in many ways a man who's come off of the presidential campaign trail and is much more interested in national issues than he is in some of the state issues that we have going on right now. I think a lot of the tone of his speech and the issues that he tried to set were kind of national leadership issues regarding, they were focused on Ohio, but some of these concepts of what are the jobs of the future looking like? He talked broadly about national politics and division. Kind of those are themes that we'll hear a lot about soon when his book comes out. Themes that we heard a lot on the campaign trail from him as well. He's in Washington, D.C. a lot. He weighed in even today on the Syrian attack that Donald Trump ordered on Thursday, saying it was the right thing to do, and then later kind of made headlines by saying that we should start the war criminal trial right now for President Bashar al-Assad. So that is where his mind is still. He wants to be viewed as a national leader. I think he's going to try to use his last 2 years as governor kind of to propel himself that way. And then, whether that's another office or just, Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't holding any office anymore, and we still apparently care what he thinks.
Yeah.
So, John Kasich, we love you to quote.
Donald Trump does, though. He always responds to his.
Okay, the governor's race coming up, going to elect a new governor for Ohio in 2018. Who is official so far in this race? Who's actually thrown their hat in the ring?
Well, I can tell you that on the Democratic side, we've got Joe Schiavone, who's the Senate Minority Leader from the Youngstown area. There is Betty Sutton, a Northeast Ohio former member of Congress. And there's also
Connie Pillich.
Oh, my gosh.
From down our way.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then on the Republican side, you have Jim Renacci, another Northeast Ohio person. He's a member of Congress. And the ones that are obviously talked about the most are the ones that haven't officially announced but have filed the paperwork and all that stuff. Mary Taylor, the lieutenant governor, John Houston, the secretary of state, and Attorney General Mike DeWine.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had an article on OPR's website about Dennis Kucinich, that he was in Ohio last weekend. And he says he's going to be here quite a bit talking to us, and yet he hasn't said whether he's going to run for governor or not.
He was directly asked by, he was speaking at an event, this group that wants to amend the Constitution to specify that money isn't speech and that corporations don't have constitutional rights. And so he was asked by a member of this group, are you going to run for governor? He told her flat out, I'm not going to answer that. I asked him later. He wouldn't answer me either. I think he's, you know, deliberately being
That's
kind of...
That's what Dennis likes to do.
Exactly. Deliberately being kind of coy.
Yeah.
And but also to get the attention that he wants to have so that he can talk about the issues that he cares about. So I think Richard Cordray is the one that a lot of Democrats are waiting on.
That's the one that,
He had a pretty fiery House testimony earlier this week and you know, kind of fighting for his job. So I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah, he's head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau right now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And his appointment runs through the middle of 2018. And there's a court case that they're waiting for rule on to see whether or not the President of the United States can fire the chief of the Bureau. And he's been defending that position, that it should not be subject to presidential removal. So, you know.
Yeah, so here's what's going on here is if he were to come home and run for governor, he can't run while he's in this position.
No,
he
can't even talk about
the
it.
Right. The best situation for him as far as getting some momentum among progressives and that sort of thing would be to be fired.
Right.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So there's kind of this battle going back and forth. A lot of people think that Republicans are trying to keep him in that office for quite some time so that he won't be able to run for Ohio governor.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, there are some Democrats who say, you know, he hasn't been in office for 10 years. He's not really charismatic. And why hasn't he, with the exception of the speech he gave this week, he hasn't really done interviews. He could put himself out there a lot more and kind of make it, force the administration's hand, make it so that they had to fire him earlier. And some folks wonder whether he really wants to do it. You know, and the one name I'm hearing a lot lately is Nan Whaley, the Dayton mayor.
Oh, yes.
She's expected to throw her hat in perhaps in the next couple of months. And I lately have heard a lot of folks who might have been Cordray people in the past kind of maybe thinking that she might be the person they'd rather back. So
John Cranley, the mayor. John Cranley, the mayor of Cincinnati, has said flat out that if Nan Whaley runs, that he would back her. That would be his candidate.
There you go.
Yep, I've heard her name as well,
really like
going back a ways. So yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she would be a formidable candidate, I think. She has no opposition she's running for re-election as mayor of Dayton this year without opposition. There was somebody who tried to get on the ballot, but he failed to get enough signatures. So, you know, and she's got some money in the bank.
Howard, are there any
other... Right, and what she can do is continue that race and then also say that she's going to run for governor. You don't have to officially file the paperwork until February. And the money that she raises for that race can then become her governor campaign money.
That's it. That's right.
So, Howard, any other names out there? Anybody else waiting in the
wings? No, I mean, I think that's the, you know, those are the big names that are going to be in this thing. And I do think, I don't think there's any question that Nan Whaley is going to do this, jump into this thing.
The only other Democrat that I put out there is, Ohio Supreme Court Justice Bill O'Neill, who has said that he might. But he's also in that position like Cordray. He can't run and be on the bench, so he would have to make a decision.
Bill O'Neill said, I might run for governor if I don't like the field that's out there. And so, but we haven't heard whether or not he likes the field that's out there so far.
Has there been any talk of Sherrod Brown leaving the Senate? Has there been any talk of Sherrod Brown leaving?
No.
Okay, running.
That's not going to happen.
He's going to run for re-election.
He's running for re-election. And, you know, Chuck Schumer would kill him if he did something like that.
Oh, Chrissy, Karen,
you know,
and
one
Howard.
One other name.
Oh, go ahead, Chrissy.
Sorry. One other name we do hear is Nina Turner, who's a former
State
right. Senator who with the Bernie Sanders supporters would really like her to run. Whether she does it, I don't know. She has alienated a lot of Democrats in Ohio for continuing to to back Bernie far beyond what they thought was necessary. So.
And the last time she ran statewide, she didn't do all that great. She ran for Secretary of State, so I don't know.
Chrissy, Karen, and Howard, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Cincinnati Inquirer Columbus Bureau Chief Chrissy Thompson, Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU Politics reporter Howard Wilkinson.